The late Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi was buried at dawn Tuesday in a secret location along with his son Muattasim and a top aide, with a few relatives and officials in attendance. Reporter Gordon Martin was the BBC correspondent in the Maghreb in 1969 when Gaddafi came to power. He spoke with Chris Altieri.
In those days, I was the BBC correspondent for the Maghreb. In other words, I covered Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya. I had my office in Tunis, and I was sitting there one morning in September when the BBC called me from London and said, somebody called Gaddafi has taken over in Libya. Can you get over there immediately? Well, that was easier said than done. So I rang up the Tunisian airline, who, after some discussion, agreed to charter me a small aircraft. And so I took over the aircraft, went to the airport with a couple of colleagues, and we set off for Tripoli. When we got into Libyan airspace, a voice came over the intercom saying, "Who are you and who authorized this flight?" The Tunisian pilot's English was not good enough to deal with this kind of unusual question. So I said in my best BBC voice, "This is Gordon Martin of the British Broadcasting Corporation. This flight has been authorized by the Revolutionary Command Council. Otherwise, the Tunisian airline would not have chartered me an aircraft." Anyway, the voice replied, "You will not be allowed to land." And I said, "Well, we have to land because we only have enough fuel to get to Tripoli." So we went on and indeed reached Tripoli and landed there. There we were pushed out of the plane at gunpoint. We were not allowed to leave. And after some discussion with my colleagues, since it was a chartered plane, we decided to go on to the Tunisian island of Djerba, which is just over the border, and discuss things later there.
Eventually, though, you were able to get back in. This was on the invitation of Gaddafi himself when he finally decided to address the World Press Corps.
That's right. That came a little later. Everybody was invited. Everybody was encouraged to go. And so I duly went there again. And this time we were allowed two questions. And since Gaddafi, one of the first things he did was to issue a total ban on alcohol. And I said, "You know, you've been talking about getting tourists in large numbers to Libya, having foreign workers in the oil fields and all that. But this is not really compatible with a total ban on alcohol." I said, "When are you going to lift it?" And he said, "Never."
Just a one-word net answer just like that, huh? Never.
That's
and
right.
On to the next question. Well, what was your next question?
My first question was on some contemporary political point. And I was simply shouted down by some of his flunkies. So I then came on to my second question about alcohol. And I said, "This time I would be grateful if the chairman of the Revolutionary Command Council, namely Colonel Gaddafi, would answer this question himself."
This was something that I can imagine neither the flunkies nor the colonel himself was used to. And he certainly has never come off as a particularly charismatic or magnetic personality to us in the West. And yet, at the beginning of his revolution, and for maybe as much as two decades and more, enjoyed immense popularity at home. For how long of that time were you in the Maghreb for the BBC and, you know, observing him? Can you walk us through maybe your years of engagement first there and then, of course, at the UN, watching a lot of the international pressure that was brought on him after his ties to terrorism, et cetera, were exposed? How did he come off internally and more broadly speaking?
Of course, in those days when he took over, he was only 27, and he was undoubtedly a remarkable figure. He kicked out the previous regime, which was the monarchy, and so on. But he immediately, or pretty soon, started to try to expand his influence beyond Libya. And I was in Tunis a few months later when he paid his first and only visit to Tunis. The Libyans and Gaddafi wanted to have a big open-air rally so that their people could go rampaging around shouting revolutionary slogans. And the Tunisians wanted none of this. And so they said, you can just have a meeting in somewhere, an enclosed building. And so they hit on a cinema called the Palmarium, which is still there in the main street of Tunis. And Bourguiba himself, who was then the leader of Tunisia, a great man, did not turn up to the meeting. It was just Gaddafi and a few of his people, and a few people like myself. And then Bourguiba had, unbeknown to anyone, Bourguiba had been listening in his residence to the Gaddafi's speech, which was not very flattering to him, Bourguiba. And Gaddafi was talking about, he said, the Arab world is full of aged leaders who have done nothing worthwhile since they came in. And Bourguiba was so incensed by this kind of thing, he suddenly appeared in the cinema. There was great cheering, because he was a very popular man. He walked up to the stage where Gaddafi had put his big military hat on the only available sheet. Bourguiba removed the hat and then proceeded to answer back. And he said, you talking about all this unification with Egypt and Syria and all the rest of it, but where has that got you? Nowhere at all. And so Gaddafi was really silenced in a sense, and that was the end of the meeting.
Hearing you talk about this, you mentioned it, the whole the pan-Arabic sort of overtone to a lot of the doings in those years. Gaddafi comes to power as a vaguely social, nominally democratic, revolutionary figure. How quickly, though, does his rule transform itself into the cult of personality that we knew in its fully developed form?
Oh, I think fairly quickly. And, of course, the in a way, the underlying factor in all this is the fact that there was absolutely no dissent. Nobody could disagree with Gaddafi. If they did, they would be in trouble. I myself was covering another meeting there a little later in Tripoli and went up to my hotel room to phone my report to the BBC. This was around 10 o'clock at night. Suddenly, there was a knock at my door. I thought this was the maid coming to make the bed or something, but I opened the door, and there was an armed sailor who pushed his way into my room and said, what are you saying to London? I said, well, I've said nothing yet because I can't get through. And I said, I have my script here. If you'd like, we can go through it, and then maybe you'll help me to get through to London. So that's what happened. He read my script and said, well, all right, that seems all right. So he went over to my bedside telephone, called the exchange and said, Mr. Martin can have his call. We got through to London and there was a girl at the BBC waiting to record my piece, when suddenly there was a most almighty crash. The cable of my telephone had got wrapped round the holster of the huge pistol that this man was wearing. And so my phone crashed to the floor. The girl in London said, "What's that?" And I said, "Oh, it's quite normal here. I've got an armed sailor in my room." And this caused quite a kerfuffle in London. Some important BBC executive was called from dinner to deal with what they thought was a crisis. But anyway, it wasn't. But that is the kind of atmosphere that developed fairly quickly in Tripoli.
Let me ask you one more thing, Gordon, if I can, because we're now at the end of the Gaddafi era. He was put in the ground earlier this morning, this Tuesday morning, and we're looking across this new wave of revolutionary fervor in the Mideast, North Africa region. Do you see any parallels with the late 60s when you were there?
I'm not sure that there was a revolutionary fervor in the 60s. Gaddafi took over and installed himself very rapidly and very solidly. So I don't really think there is too much of a parallel, no. And I think the situation now is very worrying because there never was a system under Gaddafi. He was the system, and that was that. Now, how are they going to harmonize all the different policies of these different revolutionary groups? And worryingly, what has happened to all the weapons? There are going to be a lot of weapons floating around in Tripoli, and someone may wish to put them to violent use.